This is Digital Story Podcast number 840, April 26, 2022. Today's theme is Time for a New Personal Project. I'm Derek Story. Photography is most interesting when we continually challenge ourselves. And the best way to do that is through personal projects that take us just a bit out of our comfort zone. Now that we're into 2022, it's time to find that next personal project for you. And that's the top story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I'm in the business of reinvention. That wasn't really my intention, but it certainly has worked out that way. And if you think about the arc of my career, those of you that have been following me for a long time, going back to my days at O'Reilly Media, when I started this podcast, back in 2005, I believe. Wow, long time ago. It'll be 20 years before we know it, right? And then all the things that happened afterwards, I thought, I was going to be primarily recording for lynda.com for all those years. And then, that went away. And then I was working for LowPro, for Think Tank Photo, for Rocky Nook, for CT Digital Photography. How many of you remember that gig, CT Digital Photography? And on and on and on. And every time I'd get to one of those spots, I thought, okay, this is it. And I'll be doing this kind of photography and this kind of writing. And then the world would turn upside down and I would start. Not all over again, because you have the knowledge from your previous thing that you're doing that you carry over into the next thing, whatever that happens to be, whatever that next thing happens to be. When you're not grabbed by the heels and held upside down and shaken, then sometimes you have to do that yourself. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I don't think that for many of us now, that someone's going to come along and say, Charles, you no longer should be doing just the kind of photography that you're doing. You should do something else in addition to what you're doing right now. You should learn a new thing. That's not going to happen very often. In my career, all the changes that happened with the different companies and all that kind of stuff, that forced me to reinvent and learn something new or to branch off into something that was related but different. But when we're in our own world, as we have been, honestly, for a couple of years now, then that doesn't happen as much. So we have to do it ourselves. We have to say, look, I am going to do a little reinvention. I'm going to add some new skills to my photography or to my writing. And I'm going to do that how? Well, the best way to do it is through a personal project. Take on a personal project and say, this is something that I'm going to be better at. I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to do that. But I've never been asked to do it, or I never got around to doing it, or I just never, got out of my comfort zone enough to do it. But I'm going to do it this spring, right? The spring of 2022 is going to be when I take on a personal project that stretches me just a bit, stretches my photography or my writing or my photography writing, however that happens to be. Now, to help you with this, to give you some examples, I have five ideas. Reinventing yourself or taking on a personal project is not by any means limited to these five ideas. These are just to prime the pump, okay? Just to prime the pump. So what are we talking about here? Well, let's take a look at the first one. Portraits is the first one. Now, I don't think it would be a shocker for people listening to this podcast that many in our community are primarily travel and landscape photographers. Well, that's because most enthusiast photographers are travel and landscape photographers. You mix in a little street shooting, and then very little portrait work. Some portrait work, sort of like when we have to portrait work, but not something where you go, I'm going to take on a project and create five portraits with this particular look. You know, there's all sorts of different ways to go about it. I mean, that's the nice thing about portraits. For instance, one of my favorite types of portrait work is outdoors in a beautiful setting, let's say a park, if you have a local park, with a couple reflectors and natural light, and that's it. That's all you do. You just use natural light and reflectors, the way you position the subject with the sun, you know, maybe go for a little rim lighting on the hair and on the shoulders. You know, that is a really great portrait technique. And the thing that I like about it is that you don't need a studio. You don't need a lot of gear. You basically need an extra set of hands, a reflector, and then someone to take a picture of. So that's like one portrait idea. Another way is, let's say that you're going to do natural light portraits with window lighting only, let's say a north window, and you want to do a series of five portraits with this kind of setup. And then, you know, you have the background maybe kind of trails off into the distance, and you've got that soft window light coming in, and maybe a little fill on the offside, maybe not. You know, that's kind of up to you, sort of what your vision is. But there's another way to go. Or you could go the full-on kind of studio thing where you have strobes and softboxes and say, I'm going to do a background and strobe softbox, and I'm going to do some portraits that way. So what I'm saying is, even within this category, there are many types of portraits. And let's say that, okay, I shoot portraits all the time. I'm Joe Portrait, but I do them in the studio. And I do them with softboxes and a backdrop and stuff. Well, Joe Portrait, what if you took on a personal assignment where you did them outdoors with just a reflector and no flashes at all, right? Just natural light and reflectors. So even if you already shoot portraits, you can still have a personal assignment that's a different type of portrait to help expand, you know, your repertoire, to make you, you know, shoot a little differently so that you have that technique available as well. And that's just one of them. So you see that even within a category, there's all sorts of variations. Let's pick another category, macro. One of the ways that you can really impress a viewer is a really excellent macro shot, a really close-up shot of a flower or an insect. I mean, if you really get in there and do it right, where there's all sorts of detail and color, and you show the viewer a world that they're not used to seeing, right? Because, you know, we walk by bugs and flowers all the time. But if you show them really how that flower is constructed, or, you know, how interesting that bug is, then they are fascinated by that. And this is something that we don't normally do. Now, we have lenses that close focus. So we, you know, we'll do the occasional mix it up. We'll do a close focus shot and then a landscape and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm talking about where you really get in there and do some one-to-one macro work, or even tighter than that. Maybe where you do a little supplemental lighting, again, with a reflector, or you have twin strobes, right? You have strobes on each side, and you light that way, which really helps with little creatures that move, or flowers that bend a little bit in the breeze, that kind of stuff. But macro at a level that you haven't done it before, macro at a more intense level, and then spending more time on them in post-production to get them exactly the way you want. So there's another idea. And believe me, if you're showing people mainly landscape shots all the time, which I'm sure they appreciate and love, and you drop in a couple killer macro shots, oh yeah, they're going to love it. They're gonna be impressed. And then it makes your landscape shots, when you go back to them, look even better because you're changing it up now. Here's another one that's outside of people's comfort zones. Action photography. True action photography. I'm talking about fast cars, horses, or even kids playing soccer. But you're not just going out just casually getting like the big soccer shot. No, you're getting out a nice lens, right? A nice long lens, maybe a lens that you've been sitting on that you don't use very often. And you're going to go out there and not only technically get a kind of shot that you want, but also something that has some artistic merit. So not just capturing an action shot, but an action shot that has technical merit and artistic interest. playing with technique. So let's say that you're going to do cars. For instance, up here we have a raceway, Sonoma Raceway, and they allow you to get in some pretty good positions. Well, just shooting cars at 1/1000th of a second might not be the most interesting shot in the world. So you do a little reading on it and you go, what if I slow down the shutter speed a bit? Let's say that I shoot at, 1/30th of a second, which seems counterintuitive, but if you're panning at the same speed of the car while you're shooting at 1/30th of a second, then you get some very interesting effects because the car itself can be sharp depending on how well you pan. You know, that takes some practice, but hey, you're there shooting for a couple hours. You got time, right? So the car can be sharp, or the bicycle if you do cyclists, but then you have the slow shutter speed with the motion of the wheels and stuff. And now you have something that's interesting. Not just a car frozen in time or a bicycle frozen in time, but a bicycle where maybe you get the expression of the rider and you get some motion in the wheels, but yet the bike itself, the bike frame itself is sharp. That's kind of a neat shot. So I'm not saying just action shots to go out and say, I'm going to do an action shot. An action shot where you read up and you study a little bit and you do something artistic with that action shot, something that you haven't done before. Number four, infrared. Now, this was my 2020 personal project, infrared. I had dabbled with it very casually prior to that, mainly just putting an R72 filter on a regular camera and shooting some cool black and white. But in 2020, I made it a personal project where I was really going to get into it. I was really going to learn it, and I was going to create something different than I had ever done before. And what that led to, that personal project, has led to a workshop series that's probably my most successful online workshop that carried me all the way through the pandemic and still going strong. We've got another one in May. That's a very vibrant group that we have online, the Infrared Photography Group. It never gets old. I love it. Every time I do the workshop, there's something new, something fresh that happens. And infrared is fun because you have a couple things going on. There's all the technical variables, like, what wavelength are you going to shoot at? Are you going to do color? Are you going to do black and white? All that kind of stuff. The environmental situation and how that affects, the wavelength or interacts with the wavelength that you're shooting at. And then you can reinterpret the shot five different ways in post-production and just take it another place or two. I mean, it's really wild. It's like a bunch of spinning wheels that can end up just in any sort of combination. And then I think the challenge with infrared is that once you get comfortable with the technical approach that you want to take, how do you create something that's artistic, something that people will respond to? Because sometimes with infrared, they just look at it and they go, I don't understand it. Why is everything, whatever, red, for example? But what if you create something where they look at it and they go, wow, that's kind of interesting. You've got like this blue and this gold thing happening, or those palm trees are this really beautiful pink, and the clouds are really jumping out of the sky. That's an interesting composition. So infrared is challenging on all these different levels because you have, where you're just trying to get your head around the technical side of it. And then once you do that, or once you find a path forward, then you're trying to get your head around the artistic side of it and trying to create something that has some appeal to it outside of just other infrared photographers. So I think it makes an excellent personal project. And the nice thing about it is that you can shoot infrared, in the middle of the day when nothing else is working, you can go outside and shoot infrared and come away with some really cool results. So that's number four, infrared for personal project suggestions. And then number five is analog film photography. So you think you're a good photographer? All right. Then load up a roll of color film and see how you feel when that film comes back from the lab, right? It might be a very humbling experience for you because we have been shooting, most of us have been shooting digital for so long now that we've become very accustomed to our brilliant cameras that do so many wonderful things for us. But if you go back to analog photography, where you really have to make some serious choices between shadows and highlights, where you really have to understand the temperature of the light that you're shooting in, where you really need to utilize composition to help, you know, create building blocks for the shot that work, because not all elements in the shot are going to be exposed exactly the way that you want them to, where it might not have the sharpness that you want. You know, you have all these kinds of variables, and I think it makes you go back to your photography roots and really think about, you know, aperture, shutter speed, choosing between highlights and shadows, color, all that kind of stuff. And I think that an analog project where you say, I'm going to make a series of five prints, shot originally on film, then you can scan them and do them in an inkjet printer, or you can make chemical-based prints, either way. I think creating five prints that you're happy with that started out as film images, that is a heck of a personal project. And then when you come back to digital, you'll go, oh, first of all, I'm really glad to be back to digital. And then second of all, how can I take what I learned shooting analog and make my digital even better? So I think an analog project has some real merit in terms of helping us understand our digital better, and then just creating some images that look so much different than what we've been doing with our very sophisticated digital cameras. Alrighty. So those are the five ideas to help prime the pump for you. Portraits, and there's all sorts of different types of portraits. Macro, action photography. In action photography, where you're trying to do something artistic and capture action at the same time. Infrared, get your head around the technical and then try to create something artistic. Or analog, start out trying to create something that's decent, right? And then move into something that's artistic. Now, if you have ideas for additional personal projects, something that you're very excited about that's outside of this list, I'd love to hear about it. Good luck with your project. I hope you do something. I hope you take up this challenge in 2022. And I hope you expand your photographic boundaries and then create something beautiful at the same time. A quick update on our 2022 TDS photography workshops. As I mentioned last week, the infrared photography workshop that's starting in May, right around the corner, that one is sold out. If you wanted to be a part of that workshop and you didn't make it into this one, fear not. We are going to do that one again. I'm not exactly sure when, but we are definitely going to do it again. I can almost guarantee you it'll be part of the 2023 workshop season. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get another one in this year, but for sure, 2023. In August, we have the Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop, and we have two seats available on that one. In September, we have the Physical Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop. We're down to two seats open for that one. And then in November, we have the Oregon Coast Photography Workshop, and we have three seats open for that one. You can learn more about all of these workshops and register for the one of your choice by visiting thenimblephotographer.com or thedigitalstory.com and click on workshops. All the information is there, and if you wish, you can reserve your spot as well. Hope to see you at one of these events in 2022. My favorite adventure series, A Small Wedding in Iceland. So this is the second installment of the idea that came out of a conversation at the Humboldt Redwoods workshop, where as a group, you know, we're talking and they were interested in some of my favorite assignments from the past, and we were kiddingly nicknaming these stories back in the day. So I decided to take them up on their suggestion. I ran the first one last week, the Beijing Olympics, and I have another one for you today, and there'll be a few more. This one, we're going back to 2006 for the Photoshop Lightroom adventure in Iceland. And this was a very interesting adventure for me personally. So the idea of this, it was created by Mikkel Åland. And what Mikkel wanted to do was, at the time, Lightroom was in beta form. And he thought, wouldn't it be neat that if we got a bunch of photographers, a dozen to be exact, and we went to somewhere beautiful, such as Iceland, And we tested this software under real field conditions and, you know, really put it through its paces. Because at the time, you know, Lightroom was just really a twinkle in Adobe's eye. And so Adobe loved the idea, so they jumped in on it. We got 12 photographers, all terrific photographers. I was invited as one of the 12. Now, what was interesting, since we were going to Iceland, the type of photographer that joined this group tended to be more of a landscape photographer, and they were really good. I mean, so here I am. I'm not a landscape photographer, and I definitely wasn't then. Here I am hanging out with a bunch of really good landscape photographers in Iceland, and it was slightly intimidating. You know, I'm more of a portrait, event, street photography kind of photographer. So, you know, the first couple days I'm going, how am I going to find my way here? Because I'm certainly not going to be spitting prints out in our workroom, you know, with all these other photographers who are really good at landscape photography, you know, looking over my shoulder going, what is he doing here, right? I mean, I was honestly kind of feeling that at the time. So I said, I need to find something that's my kind of photography that I can do to put my own twist, to put my own brand, to put my own thumbprint on this trip, something that's different. So my idea came to me about the third day. It was actually a lucky break. We were out photographing one of these adorable chapels that are out in the Icelandic countryside. You know, they're small. They have that red roof that looks beautiful against the countryside. And we were just taking pictures of it physically, you know, just physically and just kind of walking around it, all that sort of stuff. And the caretaker for the chapel was on the grounds, and he came over and started talking to us. And first he was sort of curious about who we were and what we were doing. And so we were chatting him up. And we always had someone with us that spoke both native tongue and then obviously English as well. Sonia, who was helping us with this, she was talking to the caretaker and they were, you know, having a good chat. And he mentioned to her that there was going to be a wedding here later on that day. And that this couple, they were very young and it was just a small family affair. And that they didn't have a photographer per se, sound like it's going to be an Uncle Bob thing. So he's telling Sonia about this and saying that if you guys want to come back, shoot a local wedding, you know, complete with some of the costuming that they do in the countryside there and so forth, that he could probably make it happen. And so Sonia comes over and talks to me because Sonia knew a little bit about my photography. And she says, there's going to be a wedding here later today. She goes, what do you think? And I go, I would love to do this wedding. I would do it, you know, obviously for free. I would give them all the pictures and I would need your help. You know, I'm going to need someone who also speaks the language here. And she says, I'll help you. I'll help you do this wedding. So she went back to the caretaker and said, we're in. I have a photographer and, you know, can you let them know? So he did. So I show up about a half an hour. Sonia and I show up about half an hour before this thing is supposed to start. They're just like looking at me. First of all, you know, I'm way taller than all of them. And they're sort of looking at me and they come up to me and say, you know, are you really going to photograph our wedding? I said, I would love to. I would be honored to. And it was very small. So there was a bride and groom. And a couple family members, a sister, I think there was a mom and dad, and then some friends and stuff. But I mean, we're talking total maybe 20, 18 to 20 in the small chapel. The person, the officiant, who was going to take care of all their ceremony duties, he was dressed up in traditional garb with, you know, kind of that ruffled neck thing and all that stuff. And very kind of a craggy looking, like he's looking at me like, you know, what are you doing here kind of thing. But he was actually fine with it, that sort of thing. You know, you can't really read him. And they honestly did not have a real photographer. So I wasn't butting in on anyone's gig. In fact, Uncle Bob still took some snaps, but he was totally relieved that he wasn't responsible for the wedding. So I'm shooting this thing mainly existing light because the light was just gorgeous and started out inside the chapel and then they moved outside. After the wedding, they wanted to do some work over by the falls, so we drove over there, and suddenly I just became part of this party. I just became part of this family, and what I thought was going to be like maybe an hour or so turned out to be 6 hours coming back after dark and suddenly being what I felt like when I left, a full-fledged family member, you know. And in fact, I had their contact information. They had mine. Later on, they sent me baby pictures. You know, I mean, the whole deal. I was like part of the family forever. And the thing about it that was so neat was that the shoot turned out beautifully. It was just a shoot that I fell into. I loved them. I loved the shoot. I loved the setting. I loved everything about it. And I loved having an opportunity to do what I do in this fantastic setting that was all new to me. The next day, you know, I had processed some of the images in Lightroom, and I was rolling them out of the printer. We had a lab with printers and all that stuff. And, you know, as I was pulling them out of the printer, the other photographers would come over, and they'd be looking over my shoulder, and they'd going, oh my gosh, that is such a beautiful portrait. Oh my gosh, you really captured that moment. Oh, that setting is fantastic. I mean, just on and on and on. And they were thrilled. They were thrilled for me. They were happy for me because they knew that I finally got to do something that I love doing in this exotic place. So the whole thing just turned out fantastic. It was a wonderful stroke of luck. But that's not the end of the story. A year later, I'm teaching at Santa Fe Workshops. And I'm doing a digital class up at Santa Fe Workshops, which at that time was very unusual because they were very film-based and, you know, they kind of frowned upon digital. So I was already kind of like not frowned upon, but, you know, like, what is he doing here sort of thing. And one of the traditions at that time at Santa Fe Workshops was that all the instructors did a presentation. They have a presentation night. And every instructor would do a short, you know, 15, 20-minute presentation of his or her work, telling a story, all that kind of stuff. Well, the year that I was there, that summer, the instructors for that particular class, let's say, were very serious. They were very serious. And there was a lot of, like, I mean, I felt like, honestly, a lot of them took themselves too seriously as well. So there's a lot of very depressing presentations. You know, and you know, we're watching, I'm watching this show, and I'm going, this is, I'm not enjoying this. This is like too sad, you know, and I'm fine with realistic photography or photojournalism or whatever, but this was, I mean, this show was bringing me down. The instructors were like, I don't know, I felt like they were really kind of milking it and, you know, trying to be artistes. About 2/3 of the way through it, it was my turn. And so I had decided what I was going to show was this wedding from Iceland, which was just beautiful. This young couple that was, they were brimming with love in this fantastic setting. Their family was happy for them. And then they were thrilled that I was there to capture it. And it was a beautiful day. And the whole thing just had this vibe that was otherworldly. Again, I'm kind of going, am I like in the wrong place here? I'm going to show this very optimistic, wonderful thing. Am I supposed to be doing something that's like a real downer and super serious? So I just said, no, I'm just going to do my thing. Just like I said in Iceland, I'm just going to do my thing and let the chips fall where they will. So I told the story of this young couple. I showed the pictures. You know, this had been a year later, and I showed them some of the baby pictures I had received from them afterwards, you know, because I was now part of the family, and just how this magical event happened when we were just standing in the right place at the right time, and this caretaker thought, someone needs to shoot this young couple's wedding. Can one of you do it? And I said, yes. So I did my thing at Santa Fe Workshops, and I showed this show, and people loved it. I got this huge round of applause. And then afterwards, the program coordinator for the show caught me on the way out. And she said, thank you so much for your show. It was truly a moment of beauty and optimism in our night. And I'm happy that, you know, you brought that to the evening. And I just want to thank you. And she thanked me like 3 times for showing the show that night. moral of this story for me is, you know, be open to opportunities, but do your thing. Do your thing. Even if you don't think you're good enough or serious enough or, you know, in step with the particular thing that's going on, but if it's your thing and you truly believe in it, do it. Because both times I did that, both in Iceland and also a year later at Santa Fe workshops, both times it turned out fantastic. And I'm so glad that I stuck to my guns and I have not wavered since. So that is my second installment of the Favorite Adventure series, A Small Wedding in Iceland. I hope you enjoyed it. All right, a little virtual camera club news. I want to thank our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support the show week in and week out, month in and month out. And they also serve as my trusted advisors for what we should be doing and, more importantly, what we should not be doing. If you want to learn more about becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look around and hopefully you will join us in 2022. And a big thanks to our current members. I have affiliate links and tiles on all the pages of the Digital Stories. If you look at the second column, there is a tile for both B&H Photo and then Amazon. If you're going to buy something that we talk about on the show, or you know, you're going to buy some new photography gear, if you take an extra step, go to the Digital Story, click on the Amazon or B&H link, and then make your purchase. I really appreciate that, and that helps support this podcast. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. A lot of the projects that I talked about, I think ideally would end up in prints, infrared prints, portrait prints, macro prints, all that kind of stuff. If you're going to do any printing at all, make sure that you go to Red River Paper first. They have that tile on all of our pages. It'll take you to our landing page, and there you can nose around. And let's say that you do some portraits. Then go to the section on portraits on their site, and they'll give you some suggestions for great papers for portraits, great papers for landscape, on and on and on. They're really here to help you get the kind of print out of your inkjet printer that you want. They are the longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you take up the personal project challenge. Come back and join me next week. I'm working on some great stories. I have more ideas for you. Until then, be safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.